like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Ronnie Graves, owner of a company based in Bushnell, Florida, which for 20 years has created custom prosthetic limbs for animals suffering from injuries, illnesses, or birth defects. An amputee himself, Graves spent many years making orthotics and prosthetics for humans before widening out to help animals with special needs. He has since helped a broad array of animals, from a duck in Florida to a sheep in upstate New York to a baby elephant in South Africa, and many, many horses. We'll trace his unusual career path, hear about some of the many animals he's helped over all these years, and more when I speak with Ronnie Graves in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll also speak with Dara Eckhart, Executive Director of Friends of Strays, about the St. Petersburg-based organization's goal to adopt out 1,000 animals in 2017. They've reached an adoption level of around 600 or so animals the last 2 years, so aiming for 1,000 is a pretty ambitious undertaking, and just about a month from today, they have to reach that goal. So hear all about that a little bit later with Dara. Meanwhile, let's get to Ronnie with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Ronnie Graves on Talking Animals. Good morning, Ronnie.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm really well, and I appreciate you joining us today on Talking Animals.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
So I've spent some time in the last few days trying to learn a bit about you. One of the main things I've learned is that the Ronnie Graves story is kind of a long and winding road. I mean, it's a great story, don't get me wrong. There seems to be a lot of chapters to it, so I hope we'll get to as many of those chapters as we can. I suspect today's conversation, of course, will wind up focusing on all prosthetics and orthotics and other things that you've fashioned for all kinds of animals over the years. But let's pick up the Ronnie Graves story a little earlier than that, if we could, like when you were first only just creating those kinds of devices for human clients. How did you get into that?
Well, I lost my leg at 20. I drove a truck for about 4.5 years and went broke. And the state of Florida, Division of Vocational Rehab, actually bought me an artificial limb and got me a job as a technician trainee at a company in Orlando, Orlando Prosthetics Laboratory. And I was paid $3.35 an hour.
Stop your bragging. Stop your bragging, Ronnie. Yeah.
I had to work two other jobs just so I could eat lunch. And that's how I got my start. And the man, Ken Reeser, was my mentor and trainer in that industry. He was so unbelievably talented and so picky. Everything had to be perfect for the patient.
Well, that's,
I really credit him with teaching me the perfection.
I was going to say, that's great training to have, even if it might be a little bit difficult as the employee. I mean, once you start, you know, launch your own business that way, I mean, all those lessons probably paid off handsomely.
It really did. 20 years later, because Division of Vocational Rehab was involved, they voted me Entrepreneur of the Year and gave me a little party at the Governor's Mansion in Tallahassee. And I thought that I actually went out and bought a suit. I did not own a suit up to that point.
That sounds like a far cry from the $3 and change an hour days, I guess.
Quite a bit. And I've been an inventor in the human prosthetics industry, creating products that went worldwide. If you see an amputee today with a skin coating on his leg to include hair, freckles, tattoos, things like that, I created the processes for doing that.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things. I mean, I was about to even ask about how the Florida folks first lined you up with that job. I mean, probably seems ridiculous, and maybe it is, but was that job that they lined you up with expressly because you yourself were an amputee and they said, well, hey, here's a prosthetic leg for you. Why don't you go work in this particular business? Was it as simple as that, or?
Not really. The counselor, Mrs. Brockington, I'll never forget her. She had me take a battery of tests, mechanical aptitude, career aptitude, IQ tests. And I had been a nurse in the Army, an RN, and gotten out. Then I lost my leg after I got out. And my scores were kind of off the chart. But my mechanical aptitude and career aptitude both tended towards the medical industry and working with my hands. And she sat down with me and we talked about it, and she said, you know, I want you to get back in medicine. And I said, I'm really fed up with medicine in that respect. And she said, well, not in a hospital. She said, I think a prosthetics lab would be the best place for you. So she negotiated with Ken to get me a job in his lab.
And was part of why you might have been open to that, besides just that the aptitude tests and stuff kind of pointed at least generally in that direction, but I would guess that at the time that you lost your leg and got the prosthetic, that like everything, I'm sure some of those, the technology and advancements and all kinds of things have changed radically over a number of years. So was there a time either before she suggested that or maybe spurred by that too, where you thought, boy, this prosthetic leg is, I'm happy to have it, but I mean, it's kind of a little bit on the crummy side, or I wish someone would design something better. And you had that the firsthand experience to really know what its shortcomings were. So were you kind of more open to her suggestion as a result of your own experience in that way?
I had already started fiddling with my own leg, trying to make it lighter, trying to make it more functional. I was extremely strong and extremely active when I lost my leg. And to have to wear a belt around my knee and a leather cuff and another belt around my waist with a 2-inch elastic strap going down my thigh seemed unbelievably cumbersome to me. And while I was driving a truck, I was working at home on hollowing out my leg. It was made out of wood, and trying to make it much lighter than what the prosthetic firm in Omaha had given me. You know, and the feet were very cumbersome, very, very heavy.
So once again, I guess we see that necessity really is the mother of invention. It sounds like even before you went on to more formally become an inventor, that you were already tinkering and trying to improve, just obviously for your own comfort and better mobility, and to make up some of the things that you had lost when you were strong and active before the accident.
Correct. And the other issue for me was that the obstacles that employers threw in front of you. I was actually turned down from working at a sewer plant. That was kind of the low point of my life because I was an amputee and I might slip on the sludge and sue the city. And I wanted to try to turn that around. Now, when I started wanting to drive a truck with my father, we had to fight the federal government in order to gain the right for me to be able to drive a truck. And it was just so unfair towards the person with a disadvantage or a difference.
Yeah, it didn't seem like, from what you're saying, that there was any allowance for, hey, let me and others like me try this. I mean, don't just discount us from the get-go. But
right.
Yeah. So you're working, and you're working under Ken Reeser's perfectionistic tendencies. And then take us through how that then eventually, I guess, branched off into your own company.
Well, I wound up working, and Ken actually told me that this was going to be the process of my career. I worked for a couple prosthetic facilities in the Orlando greater area, seeking more money each time that I progressed, and then wound up out in Louisiana managing a central fabrication company in Shreveport for a couple of years. And before I had gone out to Shreveport, I had invented the vinyl liquid skin product that was one of my creations. And I went out to Shreveport based on promises that the man out there would sell this product for me and get my company going. And he neglected his responsibilities. I stayed for 2 years. My wife and I came back home to Florida and got our company going full time. For the 2 years I worked for him, every Friday I would fly out of Shreveport and at my expense go somewhere in the country and put on a demonstration of how to use my product. And that got our product going.
So that sounds like a pretty busy thing, and again, a very sort of entrepreneurial way of doing things, but not with the kind of support at that time, at least from the employer that you had sort of had reason to expect.
It bothered me that, you know, and he had a very, very hard time. My wife was my full partner, and he couldn't stand dealing with her on a business basis. It was very archaic for us to be out there with that mentality. And then we came back to Florida. We started, I had a 12 by 30 foot shed for fabrication, and we had a 12 by 24 for an office for my wife. And it was almost comical. She would float in the pool, the phone would ring, and she'd paddle over to the edge of the pool and take an order on the phone.
Yeah. Seems very Florida-like in some ways, though. Yeah. That's great.
And then I would fill the order, and she would ship it out UPS that day.
So how many years were you and your wife? And then obviously I'm sure over time there was additional employees. But how long were you doing that kind of work before broadening out to help animals as well?
Well, I did. I was 17 years working on humans strictly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then a lady in Sumter County, Florida, came into my office, and my wife and I, she was the president of the Humane Society, and I was already well known for helping people with animals in a different manner, transporting them or just helping move hay, whatever. And the lady came into my office, and she had a Morgan mare that had fallen into an armadillo hole, destroyed her left front knee, and three veterinarians were telling her to put the horse down. And my veterinarian for my large animals was also one of hers, and he approved of me going over and looking at the horse. And I told her, I said, I've never made a knee brace for a large animal. I can't even imagine. And the smartest thing I did was I called a friend that was a large animal vet at the University of Florida, and I said, I need a crash course in the anatomy of a horse's knee, because it's nothing like the anatomy of a human knee. And so I went out and I casted the horse and came back to my lab. And I firmly believe that the person needs ownership of the device, meaning that they need to pay something for it.
Mm-hmm.
There are times I do free limbs, you know, for certain cases. Most of them, they pay an amount. But at the same time, I didn't want to charge her for experimenting on her horse. So I figured out what it was going to cost me, and I had her take that amount and donate it to our local Humane Society.
Oh, wow.
And then I made the device for free.
I gotcha. So even at that very first instance, you had this strong feeling that, hey, I don't even know if this is going to work. I've never done this before. But even then, you felt like the person, the human part of the equation at least, should pay something, should feel that ownership, no matter what the other details are.
Correct.
That's really interesting, I think.
Correct. If you're handed something, I think you lose responsibility in truly caring for it. I think if you put some dollar bills out, or if you put some effort out, if she had not had the funds, I would have said, donate X number of hours to the Humane Society. Something was going to transpire. And I think that's true in our whole society. I think if you get something for nothing, you don't care about it.
Well, that's certainly, I mean, that's that kind of lesson, I think, for a lot of families starts early. If somebody wants something, a kid wants this or that, and my case and many other cases, the parents would say, hey, that's great, but you pay for it, or depending on what it was, you know, maybe we'll split it with you. But the very same idea that you're talking about, it's like, hey, we're not just handing this thing to you. You're going
right.
to earn it on some level, half of it, all of it, whatever. And then, yeah, look at the care you'll take of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the way my parents taught me. And, you know, it's paid off very well for me in my life. But I went out and I made the device for the Morgan Mayer. Scarlett is her name. And she did great. Now, when a horse is lame, whatever side they're lame on, when that foot hits the ground most often, their head will bob down. And then they throw their head back up. What they're doing is they're transferring their weight off of that leg onto the other leg by the motion of throwing their head. And you can it's very obvious. And we put the knee brace on her, and she was on a lead rope, and the handler took her off on a walk, and she took three steps expecting her leg to still hurt. And then she stopped and turned around and looked at all of us and took off walking without a limp at all.
Wow. And when Scarlett was still favoring, or any other horse, I guess, in the same kind of situation, still favoring that other leg, doing that head bob that you've described, does that ultimately then cause some kind of muscle strain or injury resulting from the head bob itself?
Not necessarily from the head bob, but what it does is it weakens the shoulder.
Yeah, okay.
You know, or the hips, depending on which end it's on. You know, it affects their overall well-being, and if it's done too long, you can see a bowing of their spine because they're trying to walk on three legs like a tripod, so they move their feet closer together.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Ronnie Graves, owner of Veterinary Inclusive Prosthetics and Orthotics, a Florida-based company, which for 20 years or so has created custom prosthetic limbs for animals suffering from injuries, illnesses, or birth defects. If you'd like to ask Ronnie a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So a couple things about that story, it seems like to me, is first of all, even though you'd never done it before, it worked, obviously, the brace, right?
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
So in a way, based on what happened with Scarlett and that brace, was a new career, or at least a new side of your career born at that point?
It was the very, very beginning. I didn't look at it as a career at that point. And we didn't advertise. We didn't run around telling people. It was word of mouth amongst animal owners. And my veterinarian had me get involved in several cases. And then farriers would see those cases and they would tell other owners. And it led me into, I was working more time on animals than I was on humans. And there are some very rewarding parts of working on animals that I was feeling, and I'm a big animal lover to start with, but when people laugh at me, I feel that animals communicate with me, and, you know, they don't speak a human voice to me, but they communicate to me, and I know when I'm helping them or when I'm hurting them, or I looked at a goat in New York, and this goat had already had eight people try to make legs for him, and I touched him, and his opinion was like, "Don't bother."
I've been there. Yeah,
animals. Yeah, I've been there. I've done that.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. Don't do it. I turned around to the owner and I said, "Get him a wheelchair. You know, if you want to keep him alive and keep his life, he's happy. There's no doubt about that. But I'm not going to put him through it again." Now, the other thing I've had to do is putting a leg on an animal is a lot of work for the owners. I mean, they're having to constantly put it on, take it off, put it on, take it off, and do this long term to get the animal to accept the device. So if I have somebody call me, and I get a lot of them from out west where they're still using animals, you know, to work a farm, and somebody will call me and say, "Hey, my favorite horse has a problem. He's going to lose a leg, and I want you to make him a leg, and I want to turn him out to pasture with the mares and leave him there." Well, I won't make a leg for that animal because it's cruel to put a device on and never take it off again. I have to get the owners to understand that.
Well, that was one of my other questions, too, on a more fundamental day-to-day basis is, and this, of course, probably would vary a little bit with the animal and the device, but yeah, do those the prosthetics and other things that you do create, do those come on and off every single day without fail, at least, or they should?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And if I get an inkling from the owner that they're not going to do that, we simply won't make a device. We'll turn them down. We have been keeping track of it for years, and it's hard sometimes because we don't always get word back. But of our known cases that we hear from, we've got an 85% success rate when the owner follows the directions for fitting and getting the animal acclimated to it. When the owner decides to go out for a weekend and leave the leg on, we have 100% failure rate.
And is that, if it doesn't come on and off every day, as you have told them that it should, are there rashes, abscesses, problems of that kind? What happens when it doesn't come on and off every day?
Well, you have to imagine how warm that being enclosed, a hair-bearing animal,
yeah,
they can generate the heat inside that leg. So now you've got warmth, you've got perspiration, you're building skin bacterias. You're building pressure sores. That skin needs to be refreshed and dried every day. I've got a donkey on my property, Luigi, and he's been wearing a prosthesis for 12 years. He wears his leg about 16 hours a day. We have had cases where they've got them all the way to 23 hours a day. But at minimum, or at the most, you're going to have that off for 1 hour a day.
So it has to come off.
Let the air breathe.
Yeah, it sounds like just that it has to come off at least for an hour, ideally probably more. Let it breathe, all that.
And clean the leg out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm an amputee. I don't wear my leg 24/7. I take it off every night when I go to sleep.
Yeah.
And it also gives the owner the opportunity to run their hands along the leg, clean the leg, you know, and see, is there a problem? If you catch an abrasion early, we can fix it.
Sure.
If you wait until it's a bloody mess, now we're going to get the veterinarian involved. Now the leg's going to come off. Now you're going to have to break him back in and get him used to wearing it again.
No, it sounds like it's a fairly simple set of directions to follow. But yeah, if they aren't followed, it sounds like the resulting problems can be quite large ultimately. Yeah.
And the other thing that we do, we will not fit an animal without a veterinarian being involved. We get a lot of calls where the owner wants to cast the animal themselves because they feel like they know their animal better than the vet does. And when we ask to communicate with their vet, we can't contact them. We can't get a hold of them. And it's a team effort. The vet has to be on board, the owner has to be on board, and we have to be on board.
Okay, well, that sounds like you've got a pretty established protocol, and you probably have a lot of history behind why it works that way. Let me read an email that came in. It says, love your guest. I love his philosophy of some kind of payment for anything. That's why it's so important to never offer animals, quote-unquote, for free, but always ask something in payment for the animal. So there's that. And then let's get one of our callers involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ronnie Graves.
Hello?
Go ahead, it's you, please. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask a question about the bobbing of the head. Does the person there, do they think that bobbing is creating a coil and recoil effect of the fascia in order for them to move their bodies like that? It's an intrinsic thing, I think, that a lot of animals do, like how a cat can jump on top of a roof. You know, are they coiling and recoiling their fascia intrinsically to move?
That would be my opinion, yes. And remember that I'm not a veterinarian, I'm a prosthetist and orthotist. But they're energizing them, their own body, to make it easier to get over that step on that lame leg. And when they throw their head up in the air, they're helping to lift the weight off of that leg.
Okay. I get it.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, Ronnie, a couple of things you said a bit earlier that I want to comment. One is that your belief that you communicate with animals, which I don't doubt for a second. And again, you know, I've named my show Talking Animals, so I, of course, believe animals communicate on any number of levels. But also, I think a key part of the Scarlet story that obviously I think is a through line for your overall story is that when that woman came to you with Scarlet and you not only consulted that large animal vet, but if I'm not mistaken, you really kind of, as a result of, I think, that consultation, dove into self-education on horse anatomy and movement. And again, as you noted earlier, like a horse knee is very different from a human knee. So you pretty much said, hey, I got to start over to understand about knees if I'm going to stand a chance to make a brace for Scarlet.
That is correct. And if you were to walk in my lab in Bushnell, most prosthetic and orthotic labs have got big posters on their wall of human skeletal and muscular systems. And my walls are covered with cows, horses, sheep, goats, dogs, cats.
Yeah.
And, you know, me and my assistant, Sam, she and I, we sit and look at these and study them. And when we get an opportunity online or when we go to an equine show, we will attend courses that discuss the biomechanics of movement of the animal.
So even though you've been doing this for 20 years or so, and at least a lot of the same animals over that time, I think you've probably worked on in one capacity or another, you still feel like, hey, I need to go to that show or find some other way to keep educating myself on their movement or physiology or anatomy or whatever might help me
most
for the next.
Definitely. Year.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. If the day I quit learning is when they put dirt on my forehead.
Okay. You know? Well, I get that message loud and clear. All right. So
I hope that's a long time to come.
Yeah. Me too.
We should always strive to learn, and we should also strive to teach. I don't hide anything that I do. I've got an assistant that came to me as an intern wanting to study and learn with me, and I've mentored another person, a lady in Louisiana. When competitors in the human prosthetic and orthotic industry call me, I answer all of their questions on how to do something, to include when one calls me and says, hey, I'm going to start treating animals, how do I do it? I'll answer their questions because I think there's no way that I personally, as a one-man show, can take care of every animal that needs help.
But still, nonetheless, that's a distinctive attitude where I think a lot of people in whatever field they're in, they get a call from a competitor or an aspiring competitor, and they're, you know, hardly as forthcoming or helpful in that way. So good for you for sort of looking at it like, hey, if there's that many more animals that get helped as a result, everybody's a winner here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not only is the animal the winner, but, you know, the human that's helping the animal, they get something out of it. And I go to a trade show and they buy me a cup of coffee or, you know, an iced tea or dinner. And, you know, it all works out.
Well, I hope it's more dinner than a cup of coffee. But anyway, yeah. So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Ronnie Graves, who for 20 years or so has created custom prosthetic limbs for animals suffering from injuries, illnesses, birth defects. He's helped lots of horses, other animals ranging from a goose to a baby elephant, among many others. So we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF, or texting 813-433-0885. So let's talk about some of the challenging cases, either challenging because of the animal in question or because of the particular needs of that animal. I mean, I just mentioned I'm kind of one that stands out from others, and I'm sort of an elephant nut to begin with. So I'm extremely curious about your client that was the baby elephant. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that was Moses, and I got a call one day, and Moses had been his mother was poached, killed in a river, and he was a pair of twins. The other one was already passed away, and he was prematurely, you know, they cut him out of the belly, and then they rescued him, got him to the sanctuary, and his tendons in his hind legs had not formed enough in the womb to hold up his weight. So he couldn't walk. And South Africa had very strict import-export laws. If they took a cast of his legs, they would sit for 6 weeks on a shelf before they would be sent to me. If I made devices, then they would be sent, and they would sit for 6 weeks on their shelf before they'd be given to the elephant. So they gave me measurements over the phone of his legs, and then I had to go on my computer-aided design system and design the shape of an elephant's leg, which in reality, at his age, his legs were shaped like a one-pound coffee can. And so I designed them, sent them a picture of it, and I said, do they look like this? And they said yes, and the measurements were all correct. And I made the devices overnight, the braces for his legs to help stand him up straight. And then I shipped the devices to a veterinarian in Long Island overnight. She got on a plane and flew the devices in and put them right in her suitcase and went right through and never got questioned about them. And then she delivered them that day to Moses. So a total of 3 days had gone by between the time I was called and the time he had the brace.
Wow. That's, I mean, given how long Moses apparently needed some kind of help prior to that, that's amazing. And so it was fitted with the ones you had created, and then he was fine. He got the support with those weaker tendons that he needed.
Correct. And he actually only wore them for about 2 weeks until his tendons tightened up sufficiently where they would support him. Unfortunately, Moses passed away at about a year old from severe diarrhea, and they were unable to control it.
Oh, jeez.
So we have heartbreak in these stories at the same time that we have success stories.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like the Moses case being one where what you were focusing on and the problem you were trying to address was successfully addressed, but he had other medical challenges as a baby whose mom was poached and all kinds of other things that resulted from that. So
correct.
Yeah.
He didn't get the proper nourishment at birth.
Yeah.
You know, that he should have had.
All right, well, let's. We got some other emails and calls here. Let's get some other folks involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ronnie Graves.
Yeah, thanks. Another fascinating show. Sir, I'm kind of what I would describe as an animal liberationist and animal sentience activist. I don't believe that humans should enslave, corral, or otherwise use animals for much of anything. And I'm wondering about, like, if you're familiar with the story of Winter the dolphin, who had to have a prosthetic tail because of crab traps, and how humans use animals to assist them in wars. They use animals to assist them in the police agencies. They use animals to assist them in labor. They use animals to enslave them and impregnate them and steal their calves from them to make dairy products. Isn't it true that a lot of injuries to animals, especially racehorses and stuff, is coming because humans just treat animals like some kind of a biologic machine, and then they injure the animal, and it needs a prosthetic limb?
When I first got into doing this, I thought my career was going to lead towards racehorses. I really did. I thought that the high-dollar, high-money horses, the owners were going to contact me. It's been my experience that about 97% of my cases have been sanctuaries or pasture pets, people who had that horse from the time it was a foal. It's now, my oldest one, I think, was 32 years old, and the same lady owned it the whole time, and it was a pasture pet. And I don't think that most of the people who are going to abuse an animal are going to invest the time and or the money into putting a prosthetic or an orthotic device on an animal and to give it the care that it's required to take care of it on a daily basis. I think they're going to dispose of it and get another.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, Winter the dolphin is the most famous prosthetic assisted animal we've got, and Clearwater Marine Aquarium refuses to lobby against crab trapping and fishing, so it doesn't make any sense. But I'm glad you're doing what you do, and you're right. I should have thought of that. If someone's going to go to the expense of helping their animal get a prosthetic limb, they probably aren't an animal exploiter or cruelty person.
Correct.
Thanks for what you do, man.
All right. Thanks so much
for your call.
Thank you
very
much. Thanks for your question. So, Ronnie, running out of time, unfortunately, there's so many other things I wanted to get to. But one thing that was part of your response to that caller that we should note is that among the sanctuaries, I think one of your first, maybe the sheep, was for the farm sanctuary. And I think you've helped out animals at the Gentle Barn and some of the other kind of very notable sanctuaries that are looking after animals that themselves have had some sort of horrible or unfortunate life that have been rescued from that, but then sometimes they themselves need the kind of care and help that you can provide.
Correct. And Farm Sanctuary, Gentle Barn, another one, Woodstock Farm Sanctuary in New York. And, you know, I kind of want to mention Cornell University. They're doing a lot of studies on prosthetics and orthotics for animals. And if it's a large animal, they almost typically call me in to get involved. And University of Tennessee did Dudley, the Hereford steer. I made a prosthesis for him, and that was a 1,700-pound Hereford steer.
Wow.
That's quite a bit of engineering had to go into the design of his limb to support him without hurting.
That's got to be a huge engineering challenge, that with those key factors alone. So we're sort of nearing the end of our time, or maybe arguably a little bit over our time, but one of the emailers I wanted to try to get to, even if it might require a shorter answer than we would otherwise like, but it says, our 9-year-old Labradoodle appears to have a CCL issue per vet. Recommends surgery. My research indicates not so great success. Do braces or casting work, or a step to make a surgery decision?
Braces will help, and there are, we can do custom-made ones. There are some that are off-the-shelf style braces that you can find. We don't manufacture those, but They will give relief. They won't cure the problem like surgery would, but they will give relief for it and help your animal to be more mobile.
Okay. Well, there you go. There's your answer. Thanks, emailer there. So Ronnie, unfortunately, we're just at the tail end of our time. One of the things I'd hoped to get into a little bit more were some of the other animals that you've helped. We should note, before we get too much further, that the website for your business, Veterinary Inclusive Prosthetics and Orthotics, is my-vip.com. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, so people can go find out more about what you do, see some of the animals that you have helped, some of the ones we didn't get a chance to chat about, and including one or two that we have had a chance. But also, one thing, I'm sorry we ran out of time, because there's a whole nother, what I meant earlier in the show about the Rhino Gravesare being kind of long and winding, only in the best sense of that phrase, is that we didn't even touch on the whole Florida disaster animal response and transport, which has been around, I guess, for the better part of 2 decades, and you helped launch that, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I've been the president of that not-for-profit. We are actually the team that handled 3 out of 4 of the states during the BP oil spill.
Wow.
And I had to employ 87 people full-time for 5 months to make that happen. When someone donates $1 to our team, I can guarantee that 99 cents at least is going to go towards rescuing animals, be it fuel, tires, something for the transport. None of us on the board of directors accept a salary at all.
And again, it could be any number of disasters, hurricane related, BP oil spill, obviously, things like that. Anything that endangers animals that people do need to intervene and help those animals, that's in the purview, I think, of the Florida Disaster Animal Response and Transport.
We just donated over 500 crates during the hurricane that recently hit Florida.
Wow.
And just emptied our warehouse of all of our supplies. And because shelters were accepting people, but only if they had a crate to put the animal in. And people don't have crates.
So they're stuck, yeah.
The National Guard came and picked up a number of crates from us. during the hurricane.
Well, that's great. There's more things to talk about on another time. And again, this has been Ronnie Graves. Again, this company is Veterinary Inclusive Prosthetics and Orthotics. The website, one more time, is my-vip.com. And I'm just going to end this on one of the emails that I was hoping to read that came in earlier. I think it's a fitting way to sort of in our chat here. It says, what an inspiration. Thank you so much for introducing us to Ronnie Graves. Mr. Graves, thank you for your inventions and generous spirit. So I think that's the perfect point at which to leave the conversation. And indeed, I thank you as well, Ronnie, for joining us today on Talking Animals and all your great work for all kinds of animals over many, many years now.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. It's an honor.
Thank you. In a few moments, I'll speak with Dara Eckhart of Friends of Strays about the organization's goal to adopt out 1,000 animals by the end of 2017. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. We'll be featuring a newcomer to the show. This is Max Rosenblum with a piece called Dog People in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I don't know if any of you are dog people. I feel like you're not a dog person unless you bring your dog in to bring your kid to work day. That's when you know you're a dog person. My coworker Jackie loves dogs. She came into work one day, 9 a.m., burst through the door. She's like, Max, you wouldn't believe it. I was out walking Sadie last night, and someone was walking their cat. Someone was walking their cat. And I was like, okay, to be fair, that is unusual. But I find it hilarious that people scoff at the idea of people treating their cats like dogs. But they have no problem at all treating their dogs like humans. Do you know what I mean? It's like, where do you get off being like, I'm sorry, are you walking your cat right now? My dog cannot enjoy his brunch while you're walking your cat right now. It is so distracting. My fully clothed dog cannot enjoy his mimosa with your cat on a leash. You guys have been wonderful. My name is Max Rosenblum.
That was Max Rosenblum with a piece called Dog People, taken from his appearance on the YouTube channel called Comedy Time. Now on to my conversation with Dara Eckhart of Friends of Strays, where there's big ambitions to adopt out animals by the end of 2017. Let's hear about that now. This is Dara Eckhart on Talking Animals. Good morning, Dara.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
You bet. So before we jump into the matter at hand, let's do just briefly, what is Friends of Strays and what is its mission for people listening who just may not be familiar with it yet?
Well, Friends of Strays has been around since 1978, so we're heading into our 40th year. We started out as a cat rescue group, and we do now mostly rescues for homeless and abandoned animals. We do cats and dogs, and we've made several changes in the last year or so to make this place just better, and we're starting to see the benefits of the changes that we've been making.
And part of that, I guess, is really getting ever more focused on adopting out those animals.
Absolutely. So I've been here for just about a year. When I started working here, we had over 200 cats in census here on the property, and it was too much for the staff to take care of. The cats weren't happy. They weren't healthy. It was just overcrowded, and we weren't getting the adoptions that we really needed, despite the number of animals that we had here in the shelter.
So I guess my question is, even though you've only been there about a year or so, just in the last, I don't know, say 2-3 years, what would be in a typical year, what would be the number of animals that Friends of Strays does adopt out?
So last year, 2016, we adopted out 570 animals throughout the entire year. Before that, I think 500 was about the most we'd ever done in a year before. So we're really looking at being able to double the number of animals that we're finding good, loving homes for this year.
Yeah. So, yeah, the goal is 1,000, as I mentioned a couple times during the show. So I guess one question is, why 1,000? I mean, it's great. Obviously, the more animals that find homes, the happier we and everyone else are. But that also seems like extremely ambitious. If 570, okay, it's not quite double, but in the other years, if it was around 5, that is double. So was it because 1,000 is a round number? Because it's like, hey, part of the thing of aiming that high is that even if we don't quite make it, we're just going to adopt out that many more than 500 or 570?
Well, so we really started looking at making 1,000 our goal towards summer. By about August, we had already adopted out 700 animals. So we're right now at 898 animals adopted.
Wow.
So as long as if we feel like if we can get to 900 by the end of the day tomorrow, which is the last day of November, we'll be able to hit that goal of 1,000.
That's great. So
yeah.
For people listening who think, hey, I'm up for being part of this cool crusade, what would they do if they wanted to find out about adopting a cat or a dog? What's their first step or two?
First thing I would do is go to our website. It's friendsofstrays.org. And all of our animals that are available are listed on that website. It's constantly updated. So if you don't see an animal there, it's not there. If you see it there, you can pretty well feel assured that you can come in and visit with the animal. So start to check out, you know, what you might be interested in. Right now we only have a couple of dogs, but we're getting ready to pick up some more from other shelters and transfer them in. So just start looking to see what we have. We have several cats that their adoption fees have been sponsored. So you could actually come in and walk out the door with a cat that has been spayed or neutered, vaccinated, microchipped, ready to go out the door with no out-of-pocket expense to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can't afford not to adopt that cat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Well, this sounds really great, and I love the number you're at. And by the way, on a side note, one of our SharpBite and plugged-in listeners and volunteers here at the station sent me a note saying that there's also a student art show benefit coming up December 9th.
There
is. Cage Brewing, and there's portraits of adoptable pets, and this is done by artists from St. Petersburg High School. So there's all kinds of cool things. We're almost out of our time here, but I wanted to be able to slide that in. So again, go to friendsofstrays.org, see who your next companion at the house is, and help them hit that 1,000 mark. And we're so excited about this, Dara. It's so great that you're within striking distance. That's
we
cool.
Very much are. Yeah, thanks so much for your help and support today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Good luck. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including at the noon hour, midpoint with Nolay. Then at 1 p.m., Craig Kopp and John Gilmore preside over executive session. Meanwhile, on this show, as a prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a new edition of the Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, we're going to hit at least one important animal news and or announcement item, and specifically this event that the Animal Legal Defense Fund is having in St. Pete tomorrow. It's to promote the Florida Orca Protection Act. That's the bill that would ban holding orcas in captivity for entertainment. And so the talk is going to be at the Station House in St. Petersburg with Legislative Director Lindsay Harris, John Hargrove, a former SeaWorld trainer featured in Blackfish and, of course, a past Talking Animals guest. This event is non-ticketed and open to the public. It's tomorrow, Thursday, November 30th at 5:30 at the Station House, 2260 First Avenue South. And again, those folks will be speaking. And it sounds really, really cool if you care about captive orcas and just the whole situation that was brought up by Blackfish and a number of other books, including John Hargrove. So check that out. All right, so you are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a new Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. By the way, today's Name That Animal Tune selection hooks into a WNF event happening this Saturday, by which I'm referring to Ook It Out! 3.0, WNF's third annual ukulele festival being held this Saturday, December 2nd, at Cage Brewing in St. Pete, starting at 3 p.m. I think that's actually when doors open, and running till 10 p.m., featuring 8 ukulele bands, a pre-show Beatles jam, a Pete Townsend of the ukulele contest. Who are Uke? You heard me. Tons of fun, just $12 in advance. Go to WNF.org or call 813-238-8001, and not coincidentally, today's Name That Animal Tune features a titan of the ukulele. So call 813-239-9663 if you can identify this song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laurie is up next with Radioactivity. Thanks for listening. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening, in fact. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Community conscious radio, homegrown, handpicked music and news. Speak with you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. NPR headlines coming up momentarily, and then Rob Laurie with Radioactivity. Thanks.